Welcome to I'm From the Internet, a podcast about somethingawful.com, the goons, and their consequences. I am Chicago comedian Winslow Demain, and I'm sitting here with internet historian Jay Brandstetter. This week we have a very special guest, my good friend Mike Carrozza.
Hey, y'all.
In from Canada.
Hey, gang.
What's going on, Mike?
Hey, man. How you doing?
And I'm good. Mike's here for the Magic the Gathering convention. So
yeah.
We have a goth card game designer, a furry, and a Magic the Gathering player.
Oh, yeah.
So, buddy, we got, I mean, lock up your daughter. Yeah,
we're like a really weird Animorphs cover where it's like Winslow at one side and me in the other, right in the middle.
Yeah. 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 No, it's good. Just a bunch of 30-something guys with weird beards talking about nerd shit as if we are any fucking better. So,
but that's because we are, Winslow. Come on.
Yeah. This is why we need to protect the white race.
I'm Italian. Is that too much already? No.
Well, I'm only half Italian, so I'm fine. So, I mean, obviously, you're just gonna stop me, right?
Yeah. No, I made a joke on TikTok about like how many Nazi things I saw at a tattoo convention, and like that TikTok has like 4 million views. And, like, the number... there's, like, 6,000 comments, and there's so many people being like, what's wrong with the swastika? Is the swastika somehow problematic now? It's just, like... there's this dude who, like, made these response videos to me that are, like... I'm not trying to be mean. The cringiest things I have ever seen. He's, like, talking to me like he's Sephiroth. You know, he's like talking like the Joker with like tented fingers about like.
I've seen these videos.
No true tattoo.
The vibe of them is like he imagines like you and a bunch of other generals like sitting at a table and there's like a big screen that pops up and it's just their face on it and it's like we're all watching it without attention. Just like
he thinks he's Udo Kier from or he thinks he's Yuri from Command and Conquer. Like he's addressing the president. He's just like, you think you understand tattoo culture? It's like, bro, you are 43 starting flame wars on the fucking internet. That is such a weird flex.
The way you guys are describing this guy makes me feel like he's the kind of guy who thinks quick cuts happen in real life. Like the kid who thinks he's in an anime in high school. Yeah, like he's trying to move fast, but you're like, hey man, you know that's those are like animated and like that's TV, buddy. Like you know, that's but, not like, translating.
He throws a smoke bomb at his feet and expects to just disappear. He doesn't understand he has to run away.
Right. Yeah.
I am one with the smoke. He stands still until it clears out and says, you know?
Yeah. He's the guy who, when you're playing superheroes at recess, he's like, well, I'm the superhero that has all the superhero powers. It's like, oh, shut the fuck up, dude. I remember one kid, we were like playing, like running around. We were like in like third grade, running around like, pretending to be Pokemon or whatever. And one kid was like, well, I'm going to be missing. No, I have all the powers and I corrupt all your data and I win. I'm just like, you were homeschooled up until last year. And this is the clearest fucking example. Like,
and that man grew up.
Cannot handle it.
He grew up child. To be the most mature Pokemon fan.
Yes.
It is wild that.
Yeah.
Missing. No, you picked a glitch. You're so far removed out of actually playing Pokemon that you're like, I picked the thing that wasn't supposed to happen.
That said, if Pokemon took an abrupt change and like right there and just like started treating Missing No as like canon.
Oh buddy.
That would be fucking fascinating. I would be so much more.
How would they handle this? Like how would they go about it? It feels like one of those things where like theoretically, I'd be so cool and into it, but it's also like one of those things where like a corporation acknowledges a joke. Is it?
For sure.
I don't know where I land on that. It would be cool if they were like, "Hey, Missing No is real, and we're going dark." Like early, not like accidental dark, like Pokemon was at the like early Pokemon had some accidentally dark stuff where like we're just kind of shrugging off, like, you know, Cubone's head, that's it's dead mom, you know, and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And like that, whatever.
Yeah.
It is very funny that you that we started with that, because like, as this is gonna might be a nice segue into the episode, but as an adult who used to be really into cartoons and has watched a lot of children's cartoons, the Pokemon anime movies after the first couple do get really weird. Like I think the third or fourth one is like about like the unknown, like finding a girl and like recreating the memories of her dead father as a Pokemon, and then her like living with him. It's really weird. Like Pokemon is one of those franchises that's really weird like that, where like superficially, it seems very cutesy and kitty, but then you dig into it and you find stuff like that. And even, but anyways, I can't go off about how weird the Pokemon spinoffs are, because this is about a different type of animation fandom we're going to be talking about today.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It sounds like you got some stuff lined up for us. Also, we haven't even gotten into it. We'll probably have an episode another time, yeah. Maybe like a Patreon one where I talk about the rat hole fiasco, because we haven't recorded since the rat hole.
Yeah, I was going to say
that's a whole other thing.
I was going to say in the green room. Yeah, I was going to say in the green room. I'm perfectly happy just not bringing up the rat hole. You've been dealing with enough.
No, it's been fun. I've been having fun. So let's get into this, and then we'll go into that another time. So
great, and also I will say this episode is going to be pretty American centric. So Mike, since I know you guys have your cartoon ecosystem is completely different up in Canada, so I'm sure you're going to get to weigh in on some of this as we go along. But
I'll chime in with some differences.
All right, yeah. So this episode is called Pony Goons, and I want to start with a shout out to listener and internet friend Backflip Simmons. We were exchanging DMs on Twitter, and they were talking about how awesome we are. And they draw a lot of Konami fan art, so I'm going to do a solid snake voice, since it's the only one I can do. With you and Winslow, for instance, I could listen to you guys talk about My Little Pony, if that's what you really wanted to cover. You two make the topics interesting. And the funny thing is, even though I am going to read out praise online on Mike like that, of course, it rules. But the funny thing is, even though that was supposed to be like a ludicrous poll, I immediately thought through it. I was like, no, there's actually an episode there. So challenge accepted. We're going to be talking about My Little Pony today, specifically Pony Goons, because when bronies started popping up everywhere in the late 2010, when bronies started popping up everywhere in late 2010, something awful was not outside of that phenomenon. There were goons that got into the show. So that's what we're going to be talking about.
I think that it would be kind of central to it, you know? That I would think that the goons would be really plugged into the whole pony thing.
That's going to be an interesting thing to talk about to review from it, too, because it's sort of like what happens when like a small sort of like group emerges within the larger one, what happens. I guess sort of for context for this, Something Awful had a dedicated television subforum with an extensive history of discussing children's television alongside shows intended for adults. I'm not saying that to insult them or anything. I'm just establishing that TVIV was always kind of the place where you would have someone go, Batman Beyond is actually a really good show, when someone would ask for like a recommendation for crime drama. Like, it's always kind of had that line blurring. Like, a future one was, like their book forum had a running gag where people would ask for recommendations, and no matter what the genre was, they'd be like, have you read A Song of Ice and Fire by George R. R. Martin? Like, people would ask for, like, military sci-fi, and they'd be like, well, it has tropes from it, so technically, like, and also there is going to be a good amount of stuff here that's my writing. So if you all want to ever interrupt to do a joke or, you know, ask a question, go ahead. Because this one does have some text in it in between the post we're going to be reading. I don't want you guys to just be sitting there.
I do want to clarify before moving too far in. When we say pony goons, like specifically goons.
Yeah.
Because, like, look, I'm not exactly clear on what gooning is, but I thought it involved
cum. I'll take point on this one.
Thank you, Winslow.
So this whole thing, I surely have mentioned this to you. This is a very impromptu adding of a guest to the pod. This is a podcast about somethingawful.com, whose users were derisively at first and then celebratorily, if that's a word, referred to themselves as goons.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that's just, like...
Okay.
You know, it's like Lady Gaga's fans are monsters, you know.
Sure.
Fans
Something are Awful is goons. You know? Okay, so it's not necessarily, like, you know, when somebody's like, I'm gooning right now online, you're like...
No, that's, like, decades later.
Okay, that's...
Thankfully, I have a feeling
it's going to come up later, like that kind of gooning as well. But I just wanted to confirm that this isn't immediately going into being like, hey, pony goons. Yeah, we're emptying a sack on this one. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like I just want to be sure I'm not jumping in and being like, so all this is about cum? Like, immediately?
No. No, only some of it will
be. Tragically. Cum will become an issue in this episode, I'm sure.
Yeah, every episode we have, like, to call the start to cum factor, which is how far do we get before cum comes up. So, I am glad you're
an early outing for this one.
When I say Pony Goons, I am saying it all one word, capital P, because Pony Goons is the name of a group that... is going to be sort of like a whirlwind tour of the entire Brony phenomenon, something awful, but it's going to sort of focus on the Pony Goon group. So,
okay.
Great. And so I guess to sort of continue from that, to be blunt, the reputation that TVIV has is that it's sort of the opposite of their movie subform, Cinema Discusso, where instead of being snobs that overthink everything, they're slobs that don't pay attention to anything. Cinema Discusso is where you'd go to read essays. TVIV is where you'd go if you wanted to, like, read a page of single emoji posts of people reacting to a live broadcast of a show, and then spend the next week arguing about the thing they were reacting to because they were too busy reacting to pay attention. Like, I might do an episode about, like, the greatest hits of times that TVIV completely whiffed, like, a big plot point or something because they weren't paying attention. It's very funny. It's harsh, but not undeserved. I'm saying that as someone who read and posted there. But stage setting there. But this all really begins on October 10th of 2010 with an animated series called My Little Pony: Friendship is Magic. Actually, scratch that. It starts in 2009 when Discovery Communications, which at the time was run by a guy named David Zaslav, who you might recognize as the guy responsible for killing HBO Max. He's kind of become, like, no matter what type of media you're into, he's kind of the villain right now. So it's very funny that he popped up in this.
Yeah, is that the dude that killed the Acme movie?
Yeah, he's the guy who is trying to get Coyote versus Acme deleted, presumably over, like, some power struggle with its writer, James Gunn, who's, like, the head of their comic book thing. It's really dumb and petty, and yeah, so...
Better leak that. I swear to God, if nobody leaks it, it's just like... If they're about to dump it anyway, and that's just gone forever, hey, guess what? No longer at risk of any problems. Just fucking let it ride. Let's go, please.
Yeah, for those of you who might be listening in the future, we're recording in February of 2024 on the tail end of basically Hollywood figured out this weird tax loophole where if they take a finished movie and just not release it and write it off, then they like say it's like if they thought the movie was going to bomb, then they'll save more money in taxes than they would like have made up at theater. So entire completed movies are just getting shelved. And obviously this is like, you know, it's fun. It's completely destroying Warner Brothers because now no one wants to work with them because, like, I don't want to work on a movie and then have it not get released. But that's what we're talking about here.
It's not just shelved. Yeah. Some of them are full on, like, actually the files are being destroyed, deleted. All that work is being removed from history.
They have to actively destroy it as part of the tax thing. It's like you have to show that you no longer own it, which includes, like, destroying all the files. It's like... It is something you could do a whole thing on itself, and many people much smarter than me have, but I just wanted to sort of bring that up there because it's really messed up. And you can see how this guy I'm talking about here, how he would take, he's in charge of Discovery Communications. They used to have a channel called Discovery Kids, and he said this isn't making enough money, so he sold half of the rights of it to a toy company, Hasbro, and changed it to The Hub. So we went from Discovery Kids, which you probably might recognize that logo from, like, all sorts of fun science-y toys, like the mall or whatever, to The Hub, a thing to sell toys. Like, that is where this all begins. Yeah. That is the original sin of this whole fiasco. I even found, like, an archive here from the New York Times Media Decoder. You could the second part here. If someone wants to read these few paragraphs here.
I got it. The 13-year-old Discovery Kids channel will be replaced by the new venture, which is yet to be named. For Hasbro, the Discovery deal represents a big step into television. The company is expected to produce animated live action and game shows. Discovery Communications, under its chief executive David Zaslav, has pushed for more profits from a portfolio of cable channels. In a deal similar to the one with Hasbro, Discovery has a joint venture with Oprah Winfrey to turn Discovery Health Channel into OWN, the Oprah Winfrey Network. The new network is expected to debut early next year. And that's, it's just like, you know, me and Mike were talking about this off mic, but it's like it's like such a part of every single thing everywhere all the time. And, like, it's always been there, and now it's becoming especially egregious that the Jack Welchification of every single industry everywhere, where, like, there are, like, a number of festivals in comedy that are, like, really important, and if you get it, you can actually become, like, you know, get your big break from
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Except that was, like, 10 years ago, and now all of those have just been stripped mined for value, and nobody wants to give anybody anything. Everybody is just, like, squeezing as much money as they possibly can, and so now we have, like, you know, especially with, like, the world of, like, AI video and all this shit, where, like, it's just people who have never been able to make art or anything of value are now just, like, wholesale, like, carpet bombing anything else that could potentially make value.
Yeah, and this one's especially
they're
tragic,
destroying movies, you know.
Because mm-hmm. the Learning Channel yeah. was started off, it was like a government edutainment thing at one point. And that's mm-hmm. what things is, that's where all the value is from. That's what created this value. And then over the years, it was just whittled down into, like, reality show television. And, yeah, it's really sad. It sucks that yeah. now that's
just
how everything
is. It's also just, it's just, like, fully impossible to watch, like, actually watch television these days. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll be in a hotel I'll be at, like, a con or whatever, and I'll just turn on the regular mortal television, right? Not streaming. And it's just, like, the fact that I watched this kind of programming as a kid is fucking insane. Because there's nothing. It's, like, one, like, when you're watching, like, say you're watching, like, a crime show, mm-hmm. and they have, like, they paid, like, $3 to get a reenactment done. It's the worst shit you've ever seen. And then they just play the 30 seconds of footage back slower and at different angles and chopped and recut over and over again while the narrator explains to you, like, the Wikipedia page for a crime. And then they cut to commercial. And then it's like 5 minutes of commercials, and then they come back and they explain everything that they just said, add a few more sentences, cut to commercial. Mm. Like, the fact that TV is impossible to watch.
Yeah.
There's nothing in it.
It's like anything that isn't actively being consumed just regresses like that. It's like if you look at magazines now and it's basically just like clickbait. It's like, hey, here's a magazine yes. about 70s. Right. Sonny and Cher. You remember them, right? You're old. You're like people who buy magazines. Like, it's one of those things. Yeah, it's like if you're not constantly vigilant, everything just regresses into this like morass that is like awful. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very frustrating to, like, try to watch shows that were made for, that weren't made for streaming, you know, because you'll watch them on streaming, right, you know, after they broadcast, and, like, it's so much clearer how they were built for the broadcast days.
Yeah.
Because it's just, you know.
It's like when people...
Go ahead.
No, it's like when people would post, like, a clip of the Big Bang Theory with the laugh track edited out and be like, look how awkward mm-hmm. this is. I'm like, yeah, that's what the show is written and filmed around. Like, yeah, if you remove any yeah. elements of a show, it's...
With Friends, too, years before. It's not like it's, like, a new phenomenon where they take, like, a multicam sitcom where there's an audience there and, you know, basically, like, laughing and have cues to laugh and... Like, the laugh track is, like, a live thing. They're all acting around it and everything. And so
right.
the moment you take that out, like, you edit it out, it looks stupid, obviously. Obviously.
Right. To be fair, who was it? Gretchen Belker Martin, I think, is her name. She did the thing. She just had a joke that she wrote about, like, making fun of the subreddit men writing women. Mm. And it's just like, yeah, if you read smut in a snarky, like, attitude, it's going to sound bad. Mm-hmm. It's always going to sound bad. And so, yeah, if you remove the laugh track from a show, it's going to not work because it's just like, well, yeah, did you notice that if you remove Mulder from X-Files, suddenly Scully is talking to no one. Mm. Like, yeah, man, you removed a chunk of the fucking show. Of course that's going to happen.
But then they always treat it like they're being such big brain fucking, well, look at this. Yeah. Huh? Yeah.
It's like, it's not just enough for it to be bad. I have to objectively demonstrate that it is inferior. Like paradoxically, it's like something that people from the Big Bang Theory would do. Like, that is like one of the most Sheldon things imaginable. Like, it's just self-defeating.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been thinking more about it, and I think it's just like my ADHD brain is also, I have to say, 4 or 5 times throughout this recording, Jay has taken a big drink of what looks like a gallon of antifreeze.
It's just no cal- low calorie drink mix. Man, when Fred saw that in the van when I was driving, he's like, "Is that antifreeze?" Like, I don't know why.
Yeah.
No, it's just funny. But no, I've just been drinking a lot more water recently.
The ADHD part of my brain is just like, I will find myself watching ultra information dense videos because like my brain can fill in like the implications. I don't need you to explicitly lay out like it was a dark night. It's like, yeah, well, it's nighttime. It's dark. You don't need to like in fiction. I will eat that stuff up. I love like a really chewing the scenery kind of drippy setting, you know, a Lovecraft.
It's like I could pull up the Wikipedia article and read it in the time you did this, the table setting here. Like,
just the other day I was watching a video of a guy who's just like going through a tier list of the nutritional value of like different types of beans and legumes, and like, and I was just like, oh yeah, no, I probably have autism. Because I'm like an hour and a half into watching this video of a man explaining the statistics of like kale. I'm like, oh man, I don't even eat kale. Anyways, so David Zaslav hates horses. Let's go.
Yeah. So the Discovery Channel kids.
We need to take a moment to appreciate when that happens. It's a good one. Like, let it ride.
Yeah. No, I mean that's how he got his whole model for running stuff. Just take him behind the back. So because Hasbro is launching a TV channel, they have like a library of old shows like G.I. Joe, Transformers. Those are all Hasbro properties, but they commissioned a bunch of new shows based on their toy properties to launch the channel. And one of those shows was a show called My Little Pony: Friendship is Magic. We'll learn more about the specifics of the show throughout this episode, but the basic premise of My Little Pony as a franchise is you can't copyright the concept of toy horses, but you can copyright toy horses if you put unique little stickers on their butts and give them each like a little backstory so they're characters. So that's literally why My Little Ponies are like that. The cutie mark, as it is known, is a copyright device. Because we're all around the same age, if you ever had Jurassic Park toys as a kid, that's why they had the JP logo on there emblazoned on them. Same principle. Dinosaurs are generic. You can't copyright them.
Oh, good. I would love to go into a deep dive of like the smallest little things that someone has done to like switch up their copyright, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's like, I used to be
a story from another time.
Like, I used to be really into animation history and everything. Even now, like, I think part of it might be an extension of, like, my teaching and stuff. Like, I just like seeing the stuff that appeals to kids and how people think about that. But it's interesting. That's probably why I'm a lot of this is me kind of, I have a lot of context I can provide for this. Like the show, like, this was a weird time for animation, because this is 2010. 2010 was when Adventure Time premiered and kicked off the animation boom that's still kind of ongoing. So this is right before that, and we were in the depression caused by the anime craze of the 2000s. For those of you who weren't... Basically, Pokemon blew up in the late 90s, and then that made anime popular. And television animation has always relied heavily on outsourcing. But after anime, they realized we don't even have to make the shows. We can just import other people's shows, have like a non-union dubbing company dub over it, and then air it and make basically the same amount of money without having to go to the trouble of like... creating a show and having you know union talent on it and everything. Basically, what you were saying, the whole squeezing thing. It's kind of like what happened with Power Rangers in the 90s. They realized we can just import stuff cheaper. So there weren't a lot of shows being made. A lot of like skilled animators were out of work. And so when it came time for Hasbro to make these shows, they got lucky and they were able to nab a veteran television animator named Lauren Faust to helm the My Little Pony show. Now, do either of you recognize that name? It's okay if you don't, because she wasn't like super famous before this or anything.
I do recognize that name.
She's in Mephistopheles.
All right.
Is that... Yeah, Faust is in... Mephistopheles is a character in Faust. Hitler had a copy of Faust.
That's why she's such a good animator. She's had thousands of years of practice.
And then Hitler's copy of Faust was put on an auction, and then in the late 2010s was bought and given to Marilyn Manson. That's the through line for the show. Thanks for listening, folks.
I legit did not know that. Yeah, no, I'm a nerd. All my yeah. When I think Faust, it's like anime references and the Forbidden Zone. That's about it for me.
Yes. But, yes.
Yeah. So, but Lauren Faust, her big thing is that she's I really hate leading with her husband, but she is married to Craig McCracken, who is the credited creator of the Powerpuff Girls, and then later right. Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, and like they are collaborators who work together, and she was a writer and director on those shows. So like a lot of her like DNA is in those. Like if you look at the My Little Ponies that she made and the Powerpuff Girls, like they have the same eyes. You can very obviously tell like a lot of through line through that. And so she was kind of a get for Hasbro because licensed shows like this are usually very corporatized and focus group. So established people never want to work on them because it's such a struggle to get anything made. Like as an abstract example of this, when I was researching this, this is how many iterations the logo for the hub went through. Like you can see like the original Jesus. Concept is the Hasbro logo, but it says hub and it has this like, and it loses that almost immediately and just gets rock tumbled down and just like an orb with a word on it. Like, this is what trying to be creative in this environment
is kind of clever.
Yeah, you can kind of see like how something fun will happen and they'll be
the IHOP logo.
Yeah. And then the one that they finally settled on is one on the bottom right, just the circle with hub written in it. Like I think I showed it earlier. I can go back up here. The one where it has the characters in it. Like
Because it makes me think of I took a whole bunch of like black metal logos that are like, you know, all drippy and crazy.
I love your black
metal and logos. I just like I put them in like skinny Arial font and like italicized it, and I made a chart of me quote modernizing old like clunky black metal logos, and I was like, so this is Dark Throne, but it just looks like a cologne. It says Dark Throne all lowercase, and I posted that, and like the people who got the joke loved it. And then there are so many people who are like, fuck you!
Of course.
So goddamn.
That's not the real logo.
They were like, get out of here! They were so fucking mad at me. I realize I talk about how people are mad at me on the internet a lot. One, it's because I'm extremely anxious. And two, it's because sometimes when they are, it's the funniest thing in the world. Like, when my inbox is full of people being like, oh, so apparently it's wrong to have a swastika tattoo. And then the other half is just people that are, like, mad at me for making, like, Transylvanian hunger look like a cologne bottle, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with that. That is a lot of this show is. It's very funny to see people get mad on the internet.
Yeah, that's why I'm here. That's why I reached out to make this podcast in the first place.
Yeah, I'm from the internet. That's why I was on the internet, to see people get mad. But it was important. But the reason why she was willing to go through all this is like I've read like a bunch of interviews with her and stuff, and she said, you know, it was important for her to make shows targeting girls, and the only shows targeting girls that got made back then were toy commercials. So her philosophy was, I'll do the best. I'll work within the system. I'll make the best show I possibly can within the constraints of a toy commercial. So in October 10th, 2010, My Little Pony Friendship is Magic premiered and was instantly successful, not just amongst its target audience and not just amongst like adults who grew up with the show who are like, that was already an exit thing. We'll talk a little bit. I was like, an adult My Little Pony fandom has been a thing for basically as long as My Little Pony has existed. Like how there used to be those like 80s news stories about guys who collected Barbies. Like there are like, we'll talk about more about it too. It's interesting.
And I'm not someone who like, I don't know, I don't hate when adults are into like child like things, right? Like I know a lot of people are like, why are you into like kid shows and like kid cartoons and stuff. One, like now I think like you can put on Adventure Time and like the voice acting is really funny. They're really creative. They're genuinely really funny stuff going on in there because it's not desperately trying to be like edgy and poignant, like, you know, your BoJack Horseman, very like overdone poignant stuff, or your South Park, way too edgy kind of thing. And it's just like fun, weird. Like if it were like a 30-second animation that your friend made, you'd be like, this is hysterical. Look, he's got this stretchy dog talking about how there's an egg in him. That's really funny.
Yeah, that was that, for me, that was like the interesting thing about Adventure Time was that it existed as a pilot for years before it picked up, and getting some people on, be like, this is amazing. Yeah, and that was very yeah, like if you're like long-time listeners, so that probably be a surprise. But yeah, we are not entering this in the perspective of look at these losers watching a show for kids. Yeah. Like, no, this is much more.
And I know people who have been like their lives have been profoundly fucked up nightmares, and so like yeah, the safest place for them to interact with the world, you know, and not have like. Oh wait, this episode of ER is about rape trauma, and it's like, oh, that's a really horrible thing that you don't want to have thrust on you. So they just watch kids shows, and then they don't have like to deal with the insane stress of the things that they've experienced. It's like, yeah, that's perfectly fucking valid. You don't have to re-traumatize yourself.
Yeah, they're just TV shows. Yeah,
they're just TV shows. Let people like what they like, you know.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I'll say, like, watching Adventure Time, anybody that comes at Adventure Time is just shutting down a part of themselves, because really that's all it comes down to. It. Like, Adventure Time does such a great job at having, like, there's a lot of, like, meaningful story to Adventure Time that doesn't feel trapped in, like, a kid way. It's, yeah. And so it's just like, What you're actively saying when you're saying like Adventure Time, that's for kids, is you're saying you're denying yourself a different mode of expression, or you're invalidating somebody's way of seeing something, like the whimsy and like the fun of like even just like I don't know the even just like pointing out inconsistencies between like what Jake Cannon can do. Is like, you know, oh, he can stretch for like miles through a maze, but then he can't reach something on a shelf. That's fucking funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, the idea of so much trying to fact check cartoon physics is really fun to me.
Yeah.
Yes.
It makes me like, I'm sure we've all seen that poem from Neil, age 6, and he wrote. The tiger, yes. He destroyed his cage. Yes, the tiger is out. Age 6 wrote that, and that like that touches your heart. Yeah. And I know there's just if you're against that kind of childlike glee, it's just like, man, okay, have a fun time doing taxes and going to work.
Then, also, an underrated aspect of modern like children's cartoons, I think, is that like a lot of times, like a lot of people who run children's cartoons are younger than most showrunners, just because like children don't make children's cartoons, obviously, but you want someone as young as you can because they're still like plugged in with what's cool. So if you are like, you know, like Adventure Time, like I was like in my 20s when that aired, so I was like not peers with per se, but, like I was the same generation of a lot of people who worked on that show, and a lot of them were comedians I grew up with and admired. So it was very much like that sensibility. It's like stuff made for kids isn't made by kids. It's made by people our age. And so it's fun to see like how they do that and how that sort of like shows up through that filter. There's a lot to it. It's fun. Yeah. That's kind of why this is so interesting too, because we were just on our way out of this animation drought. But at the time, like if you liked cartoons, it's not like now where you have like a dozen unwatched Netflix shows that you can like pull up whenever you want. Like you were hungry for anything, and because of this, a lot of people who would otherwise like maybe turn their noses up at watching a toy commercial or watching something for girls gave it a shot, and some of them wound up liking it a lot, including some goons from Something Awful. So I did some digging, and the earliest reference I could find was TVIV has a general kids shows thread. Like, again, like they have this is a place where people already do this before the show came along. But here, we have this poster here, Liam Acerbis. Who would like to read that?
Mike, why don't you take it?
Yeah.
I got it. Out of morbid curiosity, I decided to watch the new My Little Pony show. It's not the best animated thing out there, but it is cute. Has decent voice acting, and is way better than it deserves to be. Turns out Lauren Faust is responsible for it, so that explains why it has a Powerpuff Girls-ish look to it. Check it out if you have some time to kill. I read through this whole thread, and I don't believe I've seen any mention of Mighty Max. Has anyone else here watched it? It was pretty hardcore for a kid's show. It was pretty heavy in the end. The toys were pretty
I can't read that as well.
Black metal is what that emotion's called. It's like someone with an axe wearing corpse paint.
I did pretty much. It's just a little small for me, so I didn't see it.
Oh, yeah, no, it's okay. You're not sorry. Yeah, just, I like that little last one.
The toys are pretty metal at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, this is sort of the type of show, the cartoons, like people are comparing it to at the time, like from the 80s. And this poster here, Prawn Salad. I've got another one of them. If Winslow, if you could read this one.
I unironically really like that show. Part of it is my animation nerd self geeking out over Lauren Faust and the great use of Flash.
Mm. What? That's interesting. I didn't know it was in Flash.
Part of it is being impressed by how well they're making one of those very rare shows aimed at girls, but not only well-written, but delivers morals about friendship to kids without being kitschy or saccharine about it. And part of it is the fact that it's just plain funny and endearing on a level I'm a little weirded out to discover. I've pretty much come to terms with the fact that I enjoy something cute and as colorful as this. I even added a couple MLP toys to my yearly Christmas toy donation just because I wanted to show support to the show.
Okay. Ooh. I can't wait to find out how this gets fucking perverted.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I will say, like, you know, Powerpuff Girls having come up a couple times because of Craig McCracken and Lauren Faust and all that. Like, were you guys at all Powerpuff Girls watchers when you were kids? Like, did you guys watch it?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
Yeah, no, yeah. That show was actually very special to me for a couple of reasons. One of those is I was the oldest of five kids, and I had three little sisters, so they dressed up as the Powerpuff Girls for Halloween one year, and they even, like, had one that they each kind of matched onto. So it was very, very serendipitous of them to be like, oh, we all get to have our show like that.
That's nice, yeah. I remember watching it because I was, like, it was really, really funny. It was like one of those shows that wasn't, you know, I remember my brother would make fun of me. He's like, why are you watching this show that's clearly for girls? I'd be like, cause it's good. It's like, it's a good time. And I feel like,
yeah. And there's just there's just a number of jokes where like they were allowed to be like dry.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important. Because that was always the funniest piece for me in like all of that stuff was when the humor wasn't just like, you know, like the same childish, silly bullshit,
right,
but like just like flat and dry and weird. Because like there you can really tell in the earlier episodes of Dexter's Lab when it was Seth MacFarlane like spearheading some of the writing on that show. Mm-hmm. And it like there's just like these really weird like early proto cutaway gags that Seth would do.
Yeah,
and they were like
the Johnny really Bravo funny episodes are really weird for that too. Yeah, like they even have Adam West in it as like basically the same character as Mayor Adam West, like as himself. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just like I think what I like a cutaway gag. Mm-hmm. I like a quote unquote random humor, but I don't need it to be like the most vulgar thing that a whole bunch of like libertarians can think of, you know? And so like when they actually go just weird, flat and dry, like fucking, that's why Joe Pera hits a really special spot for me.
Yeah.
It's because like his stuff will have some really random twists to it.
Of course.
But it's sweet. And that's so much harder to write than just being like, hey, man, what if Hitler raped 9/11? And it's like, man, what if? What's the joke?
Well, clearly, Winslow, I think what you're missing here is that Hitler wasn't around for 9/11. So it's preposterous to think that he would be able to rape 9/11. And that's where the absurdity of it all comes from. If I had to break it down, like, look, I'm not a historian or anything, so I might not have all my facts together. But I do fancy myself a bit of a, you know, a smart boy. So I like to think that, like, maybe that might be why people thought that was, like, you know, highbrow and good.
Yeah. still not my fave. Yeah. But, yeah.
I mean, I'll say, like, Powerpuff Girls did a lot of, like, really cool slapstick stuff with animation and then also did, like, meta stuff. Like, the fact that you never see the mayor's wife's face because she's so tall and he's, like, the focal point of the...
Yeah, and also the mayor, you know, that's Tom Kenny before SpongeBob. That's when he was a Mr. Right. Show guy. So exactly. It's very funny that he's on this children's show. Yeah. Yeah.
But then you'll also have gags where the Powerpuff Girls will be talking and they're like, you know, Bubbles will be like, my fingers feel weird. And it's like, you don't have fingers. I'm like, you know?
Yeah. I remember they had a bumper for the show where Mojo Jojo was talking about, like, have you noticed they don't even have fingers? Yeah. They can't even have fists. I've been beat up with like these nubs. Uh-huh. I just thought that was like such a funny little like
Yeah.
You know?
And also, and again, three grown-ass men talking about a cartoon that is ostensibly for girls, and it was just like, no, it was just like a good show. Like, nobody, that was another thing about Powerpuff Girls was how much crossover success it had. Like, it was one of those cartoons that adults were watching, and also, like, boys would watch it. Like, it didn't have as much stigma as you might expect. Like, exactly. Like, compared, like, how many girls were watching Ed, Edd n Eddy by comparison? Like, I don't, okay, some women do. Like, I've seen Rebecca Sugar's fan art, but, you know.
Right. No, I had a fucking Powerpuff Girls, folder. I just found that when I was back home for Christmas. It was like for some class in grade school. It was all covered in like fucked up stickers and shit, but yeah.
So on January 17th, 2011, after that, so this is about a month after the show premieres, or a couple months, in the TVIV, they make a thread called My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. This is completely normal. You've been warned. And if the formatting looks a little different, it's because Goons being Goons, they deleted this thread from the forums for reasons I'm going to talk about later, so I had to use a backup from Pony Goons. Like, that's sort of thing I want to give a shout out to Pony Goons, is that they were very good archivists. Like, they had backups of, like, the original 4chan threads about My Little Pony, like when it first started, about like places like the Penny Arcade Forum. Like, that was a neat thing too, seeing this big cross section of all these communities kind of like falling in for and discovering this show. But
so is Pony Goons is a website or a person?
It is a website. It's a forum.
Like a collective.
It's like a collective group. It's like, but it's also like what the goons on Something Awful who were into My Little Pony called themselves. Like, we're not bronies, we're Pony Goons. Like, we're goons like My Little Pony. We're not a part of the, like, this other fandom, like, you know,
I'll say that, like, as someone who's like, yes, I'm online, but I don't consider myself as online as, like, hey, 4chan, 8chan, etc. Like, it is always endlessly fascinating to me. The, let's say, like, these communities where they're like, no, this is worth documenting and archiving, and like, this is, you know, they look at this in real time and go, No. This is worth making sure that if ever it were to be wiped anywhere, that it, like, this means enough to me that I have to do that. It's endlessly fascinating to me which communities feel that they need to do that or have done that just like out of habit. And so, and this one in particular is like, they're just documenting the fact that they like a show and are expressing it to each other.
Well, it's also how they talk to their friends and stuff like that. Like, I mean, a very real part of me died when the Manson USA forums were taken off the internet. However many years ago it's been like, so god, if that happened when I was in high school.
Yeah,
but not because like, oh, I really want to go there and talk about Manson. Obviously, it would be a shit show. It would have been a shit show for a decade. But because, like, that's where all of my friends were. And it's also, like, there were really amazing essays that were written there. Mm. And I'm sure in the My Little Pony world, there's, like, lots of fan fiction. And, like, fan fiction, you know, we're not talking about a single thread. We're talking about, like, you know, forums with hundreds of posts. And, like, you know, there, some of these things are, like, 500 pages of posts long, where it's, like, the origin points for so many jokes. Like, we'll be talking later on this season with the guy that started Rickrolling.
Oh, and, like, wow.
That's such a turning point for, like, for meme culture in America. Is Rickrolling, like, completely dead and done? Obviously, yes. But the fact that that we have a documentation of it all is interesting. Because, like, of course, it's not interesting to us now. But, you know, like, the things that happened just today aren't going to be terribly interesting. And we don't think that it's historically significant. But, like, you know, how interesting could it be in 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody sends a link that goes to the Rick Astley video. And that the minute that they do that, they just thought that they did one little funny thing. They would have no idea that they would be, like, taking part in the grand revival of this artist's career, you know, like, you have no idea. So it's like, document everything. I am, as we're writing this, I'm backing up 8 terabytes of my life story onto a separate external hard drive right now. So
8 terabytes. Wow.
Yeah. Well, that my computer's, I think, like, that's probably 18 terabytes total now.
Nice.
I mean, I'm a photographer.
Exactly. Yeah, you gotta have this.
I'm not surprised that you have that much data. I'm surprised that you're backing up 8 terabytes at once. Like, it hasn't been incremental.
Oh, I just got it. Okay.
All right, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and I mean, a lot of this site, a lot of the show exists because of people like that. Like, if anything, it's kind of made me try and be a little bit better about preserving stuff like this, because I generally think a part of it is like personality, like certain personality types and certain like neurodiversities are into like that type of documentation and recording, and nerdy fandoms tend to attract people like that. Like, the early history of the furry community is very well documented because it was a lot of nerds that like to like. That were also like audiophiles who like to record stuff. So they would like take their camcorders, like the 70s camcorders, with them to like meetings and stuff. So that's one of the things about nerds, is we are very good at documenting stuff. And, you know, there might be some downsides to that, but this is one of the upsides of it, is when I want to find like a deleted thread from 15 years ago on something awful, someone be like, oh, I got that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. I do have the original post here from Red Eye Flight. I'm going to read their bits and then the bolded ones. Winslow, can you read those?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. So, My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic is a new cartoon from Hasbro revolving around the...
I'm leaving.
Get back here. Despite the extremely girly name, saturation of pinks in the color scheme, and legacy attachment to the 80s, this cartoon is good. Sit down and I'll tell you why.
Okay, why should I watch this?
It's directed, produced, and overseen by Lauren Faust, wife of Craig McCracken. Doing the thing I tried so hard not to do.
Yeah.
You might know her better from work such as The Powerpuff Girls and Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. This is a woman who, A, knows what she's doing, and B, doesn't go for the old let's throw tea parties and defeat villains by sharing bullshit. And this shows through strongly in Friendship is Magic. It feels much more like The Powerpuff Girls than any previous MLP cartoon. The writing is clever and snappy, the humor is surprisingly witty, the voice acting is top-notch, the characters are distinct and likable, and in every episode there's at least one Joker reference, which was clearly put in more for the adults watching than the kids. Oh, and the art is damn good, too.
I don't believe you. My Little Pony cartoon that doesn't rot your teeth?
I know, but this thing is on fire. Despite a rather unfortunate time slot, it's found a wide and devoted audience already and is quickly shedding the old albatross of girls' cartoons past. A good chunk of that audience, surprisingly, is also male and in the 20 to 35 demographic. Although most of those would probably never admit to watching it, at least not in public.
Very okay. So, yeah. A couple interesting things about this is that one. Scroll up real quick.
Sure, yeah, yeah. This is the product of trying to sell goons on this show. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. Well, one, it is funny to see them talking about legacy attachments to the 80s. When, like, oh, you have no idea how much the world is jacking off the 80s. Mm-hmm. Like, now, mm-hmm. It's crazy how much we're trying to go back to the 80s when it was like, oh, yeah, an extremely dark, miserable fucking time that had Neon and Chernobyl and Reagan. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all you want. But it, what's funny is that this... maybe I'm reading this wrong, So they do say that it has, despite the extremely girly name, they talk about girls' cartoons in here, and it doesn't sound dismissive. It sounds like, actually, girls' cartoons, whatever that means, right?
Yeah.
Have good things going on, too, and this is a really good cartoon, despite it looking like something else. It seems more sympathetic to girls. This doesn't... scream to me someone who is like completely grotesquely ashamed of watching.
I'll disagree here a little bit. Like, I think that, like, yes, it's defending this cartoon and being like, you know, despite this, despite that, that is distancing. That is, like, you know,
it's
very defensive. Yeah.
But I do think that it, like, if you don't mind scrolling up a little bit more, there's one line. Okay, stop right there. The one line that stood out to me is like, oh, like, there's still this undercurrent of like you hate something about what are quote unquote girls cartoons, which is B doesn't go for the old let's throw tea parties and defeat villains by sharing bullshit. And like that feels like very pointed in that, like, this is what they've come to
expect from quote unquote girly cartoons. You know what I mean? So like,
right.
Like,
well, maybe they're, go ahead.
But that's literally like, if that was a hallmark of what girly cartoons were, there is like that. That's what they're saying is like something that doesn't sit well with them either. And so there is like this derisiveness of like, you know, it's time to embrace some girly cartoons. Like, yes, it's girly, sure, but it's also not like other girls. You know what I mean? That's what it's feeling like. It's got like this, this pick-me energy to it, which is effective in that, like, yeah, it got a lot of people to be like, yeah, hey, there's a lot more than just, you know, the stuff that seems like it's for girls. It's a lot deeper than that. But it's also like putting down other efforts that might very well be resonating with people.
Yeah, I guess my perspective, kind of someone who is immersed in this, is I feel like that it's actually kind of specifically referencing in the show, like the pilot episode is like a two-parter about them like going on an adventure to defeat a monster and stuff. Like, and the idea is like a lot of women I've seen like complaining that like girls' cartoon they didn't get action cartoons back then. Like Sailor Moon was like the one big action cartoon for girls, and there was like some Sailor Moon DNA in this. Like she literally gets like a magic tiara that gives her like superpowers and stuff. Like. There is that sort of DS. I think that's what they're alluding to in this. Like, this isn't like a cartoon where it's like Pepper Ann or whatever. It's like, it's a bunch of high school girls hanging out and talking about boys or whatever. It's like, no, this isn't a fantasy adventure series. Like, I guess in that particular context, but you are right. There is a sort of, especially now, I feel like that gave me flashbacks. Like people like, I'm not a big fan of Steven Universe, but people who hate it because he doesn't like kill people are like, what do you want from the show? Like, what did you expect? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's the first post. Yeah, like pretty sympathetic, like pretty, I think pretty good place. Second post.
What is picture of...
the profile picture is Data from Star Trek with an LA hat reading a script or reading a book, but the text of it is just, what in the hell?
All lowercase. And the person posting it, that blue star by their name, means they're a moderator. So this is A-Trek, the moderator of TVIV. Okay. If that name sounds familiar to somebody with very good memory, just put a pin in that. That's going to pop up later, who he is.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so literally this very well-presented thing about like, hey, this is actually a good show. First response is the person in charge being like, what the hell is this crap? So like immediately setting the stage there, but...
Right.
Yeah.
Away.
So, but I would say like a big part of why Friendship is Magic blew up across the internet is that it was all on YouTube because it was produced by Hasbro and they owned the television network that was airing it. So they didn't have to care about ratings or selling ads. The show existed primarily as a toy commercial. So having it free online made it a more effective ad because more people could see it. And legit, I think that is a huge part of why the Brony phenomenon happened. Just the fact that, you know, any depressed person with an internet connection could just pull the show up with like a click. And that was like a big part of it, was how they would just be like streams running with it on a loop all the time. Or you could go on YouTube and like they weren't official uploads, but they weren't taking it down. They're letting people rehost it. So especially like for a show like this where,
I like specifying depressed person with an internet connection.
I mean, I'm talking about myself there. Like, I'm going to get a little bit to that later. But like, obviously, I watched the show, was participating in this community
for sure.
To a degree. So,
I do like that. That's how specific about it you got. I just I appreciated that detail.
So people start watching the show because it's there and it's January. Like, what else are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And wouldn't you know it, some of them end up liking it and posting sincerely through the riffing. That's another fun thing too. Is like a lot of people, like, I feel like watched it to make fun of it. And they're like, oh, I actually like this. So like in a weird way, the mocking kind of helped it. Like, here, I got a sampling of quotes here. So here we go. Who wants to do Ono Marcus?
I'll take that one.
Go ahead.
As I pointed out in the Mass Effect 2 thread, this show's plot, or at least the plot of the first two-parters, seems to overlap heavily with the plot of the Mass Effect series.
Wow.
All right.
That is a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
I have a theory that the purpose of the V-chip was really to monitor grown men who watch shows like this and put them on a sex offender watch list.
To protect ponies or children?
Yeah, next response is to protect the ponies or children.
Incredible.
Yeah,
that's I thought you'd include that because that is kind of setting the stage. The pushback to this is like you're all pedophiles or like you all want to have sex with horses. Like that's really the world they go to. Yeah, this last one here by poster Renee. Like why did I watch that? Then in italics, why did I like it? Stare emoticon.
Yeah. So,
yeah, just people. Some people are legitimately liking it, and with the way the reason why I'm putting this is like with the way that Goons would go on to talk about My Little Pony, I really wanted to emphasize that this is what the actual reaction to the show was like at the time. It was like people who like cartoons going, "Oh, this is better than I expected. Thanks for the recommendation," and then just like total assholes rolling up and calling them pedophiles for not watching the right kinds of cartoons. Like, ooh, I think there's a quote that didn't make it in here where it was literally the guy be like, "Why can't you watch Archer? That's a good cartoon," or whatever. Like,
yeah, because it's got cussing and guns.
But anyways, because of stuff that's going to happen, these pony goons aren't around on Something Awful anymore. So now that they aren't, the people that are left behind, the people who made fun of them, have just been playing goon telephone for the past decade. So now when they talk about the original thread, they take every half-remembered, like, brony cringe compilation they saw over the years and attribute it all to that one thread. And since that thread isn't on the forums anymore, there's no way to disprove any of it, so the myth just kept growing. That's why I was really glad to have an actual copy of this, because to hear them talk about it, that thread was nothing but child pornography and horse genitals. And then you read the actual thread, and it's like stoners and people watching it with their kids. It's like so different. It's like, have you ever watched that documentary Capturing the Freedmans? Like, it's about like an 80s, like a child molestation panic that happened in this small town. And there's like this really like really infamous scene of like the cops describing going in the guy's house and it being like a dungeon of child pornography, and they show the actual like police footage of them like storming his house, and it's just a regular ass living room. Like, that's the same feeling I got reading this original thread. I was like, wow, none of that stuff was here. It is really, really, and like, that's why I included a link in the document if you want to read it yourself. Like, obviously I'm picking and choosing highlights here, but it was very inane, especially with how we associate bronies now, I feel, of this era.
Captain Freeman is also the same guy who did the Jinx behind that one, right?
I think so, yeah. No, he's worked with HBO and made a lot of good stuff over here.
I'm gonna butcher this screen name, but Marchigiana, whatever.
I can confirm that the pony toys are at McDonald's now. For those of you who are manly enough to want to get one, both my girls got a Pinkie Pie last night, which kind of disappointed my oldest, who's a total Rainbow Dash.
And then the response is Funks, who said,
"Christ, this show is so amazing when you're high as fuck. Although it's nowhere near as perfect as Adventure Time," weed emoji.
And I didn't edit that. Those were just one right after the other. That was a perfect illustration of what I was talking about. Yeah. And like, I'm going to say, like, there was some weird stuff in the thread, but none of it really came from the pony goons. It was all from the goons that were making fun of them. Like, one example that's popped up a lot over the years on Something Awful is the phrase "rock hard poner." People, it gets quoted regularly on the forums. I'm here. Ibram Gaunt, "my rock hard poner remembers," Insatius, "rock hard poner." That's from 2015 and 2023 respectively. So this is something people are still talking about. And it wasn't something that a pony goon posted. It was something that a Phaiad poster wrote to make fun of them. So who wants to read Autism Monday's post?
I'm on it.
Mike, you take that.
I have to ask, Phaiad, what's that acronym for?
Fuck you and die.
Okay, got it.
And that is their sub forum that is just like and needlessly hostile wasteland. Am I correct?
Yeah, the literal description is for flame wars and epic pictures is what they say. So yeah.
Okay. Oh wow.
So here we go. Autism Monday wrote, "Hey fellow pony goons, any pony get a rock hard poner looking at that sweet fan art? Just kidding. Can't read that emoji. This is a good show for adults and not weird at all." And then it says that the
user was put on probation for this. Exactly. Post.
Yeah. And also,
okay, explain the post count thing again.
So whenever someone posts in Phaiad, like usually when you make a post on Something Awful, it increases your post count by one. When you make a post in Phaiad, it decreases your post count by one. So there was always kind of like a slogan where you say, always check the post count, because that's how you know if a person is being sincere or if it's like a Phaiad troll. How many posts does Autism Monday have?
Jesus Christ. -20,970.
And that was like a live stat I pulled when I did that. So, yeah.
There's so many things that Something Awful does that are so fucking funny to me, because it's like I love a structural joke. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that they coded it so that it would like give you a -1 to your post count is so fucking funny to me. You know?
Yeah, that was like such
I love it.
Brilliant concept. Yeah. So simple, but
if you're listening to this and you have any good examples of like structural jokes where something is like in like built to be funny rather than just like a straight up and down joke, I fucking live for that, man.
Cool.
Like the way that the website operates to like intentionally fuck with users is just hysterical.
Yeah, and like all the ways that they've monetized it as well, it is very funny. Yeah, so Autism Monday's Rock Hard Poner masterstroke there. Because I got probated for that, everyone else from FIAD still wanted to bother the thread, so they just posted in it, like, really insipidly on purpose. we have some FIAD comedy. I'll start with Tongrax, who they're quoting.
Has anyone else noticed how the ponies' names and hindquarters picture stampings reflect their personalities? Cool little Easter egg, sorta.
And then, yeah, the Beardmaster 420 says,
thought I was the only one who noticed this. Nice.
And then Reuter says,
ha, comma, ha. I can't unsee it now. Damn you, sir.
And this is real.
So, yeah, yeah. It's just fucking losers talking.
And
yeah,
it's really depressing because, like, Reuter especially is, like, a really funny FIAD poster. Like, I might do a whole episode just about them in the Buddhism mega thread, like, talking with, like, super angry people who are like, no, I understand Buddhism. And I'm just, like, completely... angry Buddhists are just an inherently funny concept, and his is so good. But, yeah, this is not the best FIAD has sent. And just, yeah, that didn't go unnoticed. I don't have the poster here, but someone from the thread, I think, to kind of close out on that, they're just like, anyway, the trolling in this thread is really boring, FIAD. We just want to talk about ponies, sad emote. So,
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah. And this post here by Dog Days Are Over. Mike, could you read this one here?
Right. So this is in response to Speed of Life posting, only positive comments are allowed. Dog Days Are Over says, criticism would be cool if the people actually watched the thing they were criticizing and not just, this is for girls, you are pedophiles.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, still, I mean, like, I think it's dorky as shit to watch My Little Pony, sure. But I don't mean that in a mean way, because there's a lot of shit that I get into that's dorky as shit in a different direction.
Sure.
Also, nothing makes me feel like I'm in the Warhammer universe more than seeing pedophiles spelled with the P-A-E-O-D-O files. So it's like Damon, you know? Yeah. Pedophiles.
I always pronounce it like that one Brass Eye special, just the pedophiles, like that's what the British Isles are.
Pedophiles. Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah, dude, Brass Eye was so fucking good.
God, yeah, no. Every time I watch that special, I'm afraid it might. I'm like, last time I rewatched it, I was like, oh God, I hope that. And no, just funny start to finish. Fantastic. Yeah. But,
yeah.
And I guess I did mention this a little earlier, but another neat thing about that MLP thread is that because Something Awful was already a decade old at this point, there were some goons who were already longstanding adult fans of MLP because they were girls who grew up with it as kids when they were kids. So you get them talking about the collecting world. They're showing off stuff like these like custom ponies people make because the old ones are made out of cheap plastic, so they decay over time. And what the artists will do is cut off the decayed parts and replace it with like custom stuff and make these like bespoke little ponies. Like, neat little thing to learn about. And there are like some horror ones and stuff too. Yeah, like this is like. Yeah. This is what I think is like cool fandom, where it's people actually making stuff based on the things that inspire them. Like, even if it's something like just a thing you liked when you were a kid, good on them. Way better than anything I could do, I can say that much.
Yeah, no, those look great. I mean, like, for being a, you know, cartoon pony made of, like, molded.
Yeah, also, the original ponies are pretty ugly. They look more like ducks than horses to me.
Yeah, they have a really strong upper lip that's... strange design choice.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, the molding on the wings is like that's high detail. As someone who like is trying to get into like silicone molding and all.
Yeah, they might have sculpted that even. Who knows? But yeah, so this thread has been going around pretty okay, but then on January 24th it gets moved to the pretentious hipster irony zone.
Well, no, it's just really funny to me that like every illustration of leftists fighting leftists fighting leftists fighting leftists is also applicable to Something Awful users fighting Something Awful users all the way down. Because it's just like they're the monkeys yeah. that are fighting on the ship, and it's also the people throwing money at the monkeys. So it's like, it's just assholes hating assholes hating assholes. It's such a fucking funny sight.
Yeah, and then immediately when they move it there, the people from Fizz just start posting weird porn to own the show watchers. And I included a conspicuously cropped screenshot here.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think we can imagine what's going on here.
Yeah. Yeah, and it says, I understand this is the place if I want to discuss my pony transformation fetish. And there's a, we don't need to fill out time for this. So I will Google that later. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I mean, there's not really that much to it. It's just, as a furry, I see a lot of this type of artwork, and everyone always makes that exact same expression when they're mid-transformation, just like a, whoa, look. Like, it's just always the same facial expression. It's very funny to notice. It's like how in the gay community, bears never smile in their picture. They always just have, like, that one single smirk. It's just, when you notice a pattern, I like that.
They don't. I always thought that bears have the big old smile because they're just so, they finally crack the code and they're not ashamed of their bodies anymore.
You would think that, but no, the whole thing is, like, you don't want to look feminine by smiling with it, like, showing your teeth. So it's like so you do, like, a closed mouth kind of, like, smirk to show you're not, like, too, so it's very funny. I don't have that problem at all. I just grin like an idiot all the time.
Yeah, I guess a bear is not just, like, a big hairy guy.
It's a gay subculture. It's right, not just an aesthetic or appearance. It's like people who are into it. It's like, well, if I want to appeal to the type of people that are into this, they want me to be dominant. They want me to be masculine. It's just another prison. It sucks.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. We will do another episode about bears at some point in time.
Yeah, this is the pony episode that we're gonna have a bear episode. One thing I thought was pretty funny is that the reason why this was moved is A-Trek, the moderator who was making Throne of the Fed from earlier, moved it there because he didn't want to deal with it anymore. He thought he could score points with the, quote, cool posters by moving it to Fizz. And we have the reaction here. I'll read A-Trek's posts. He goes, and we're off. And Winslow, if you could read Het's reply there.
By the way, A-Trek, go fuck yourself. Hey, by the way, some people took this as me telling A-Trek to go fuck himself and closing the thread. On the contrary, I did not close the thread. The OP did, and I did not see any reason to change that. Edit. Perhaps go fuck yourself is a little rude. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
A little rude, yeah. But yeah, I think that's basically, yeah, they were like, we don't want to make fun of these people, and they don't want to post here. You just did like a lame thing. Fuck you.
Hi everybody, Winslow here. It sounds like we got a little ahead of ourselves on this episode, and we will have to cut it into two parts. So we will be back next week with the grand conclusion of the brony pony boner fandom as it relates to something awful. As always, you can find Jay Brandstetter on Twitter at Jay Brandstetter, and you can find us at IFTIPod. You can email us at IFTIPod@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at Winslow Dumain, and I'm on Instagram at Calculations. And give us a follow there. You can email us, talk to us. We're happy to hear from you. But thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week. I'm From the Internet is created by Jay Brandstetter and Winslow Dumain. Edited by Steve Brown. Music by Steve Isbrook.
This is staying in, but Winslow in the house just said rock hard toner.
rock collar.